This isn't a smart move for you, I said. The kid's connected. If anything bad happens to him, you're in for trouble. Is that a threat? He asked. I shook my head. Chuck, I've got no objection to working things out peaceably, and I've got no objection to doing it the other way. If you know my reputation, then you know what a sincere guy I am. Perhaps I should kill you now. Here, in public? I asked. All these witnesses? You aren't going to do that. No, no, even if you win, you lose. You're just hoping to scare me off. I nodded toward his goons. Ghouls, right. It's going to take more than two, Chuck. Hell, I like fighting ghouls. No matter what I do to them, I never feel bad about it afterward. Barrowill missed the reference, like the monsters usually do. He looked at me, then at his Rolex. I'll give you until midnight to leave the state. After that, you're gone, one way or another. Hang on, I said. I'm terrified. Let me catch my breath. Barrowill's eyes shifted color slightly from a deep green to a much paler, angrier shade of green gold. I react poorly to those who threaten my family's well-being, Dresden. Yeah, you're a regular Ozzie Nelson, John Walton, Ben Cartwright. Excuse me, Mr. Drummond, Charles, in charge? No? What are you blabbering about? Hell's bells, man. Don't any of you white court bozos ever watch television? I'm giving you pop reference gold here. Gold. Barrowill stared at me with opaque reptilian eyes. Then he said simply, midnight. He took two steps back before he turned his back on me and got into his car. His goons both gave me hard looks before they, too, got into the car and pulled away. I watched the car roll out. Despite the attitude I'd given Barrowill, I knew better than to take him lightly. Any vampire is a dangerous foe, and one of them with holdings and resources and his own personal brute squad was more so. Not only that, but from his point of view, I was messing around with his little girl's best interests. The vampires of the White Court were, to a degree, as dangerous as they were because they were partly human. They had human emotions, human motivations, human reactions. Barrowill could be as irrationally protective of his family as anyone else, except that they were also inhuman. All of those human drives were intertwined with a parasitic spirit they called a hunger, where all the power and hunger of their vampire parts came from. Take one part human faults and insecurities and add it to one part inhuman power and motivation, and what do you get? Trouble. Barrowill? Officer Dean asked me. The oil guy? He keeps a stable of congressmen. Yeah, probably the same guy, I said. All vampires like having money and status. It makes their lives easier. Dean snorted. Every vampire and every non-vampire. I said, point. You were in a fix, he said. Tell the girl you might wreck her. Don't tell her, and you might wreck her and Kid Bigfoot both. Either way, somebody's dad has a bone to pick with you. Pretty much. Seems to me a smart guy would have washed his hands of the whole mess and left town. I shrugged. Yeah, but I was the only guy there. Forest isn't exactly the dominant terrain in Norman, but there are a few trees here and there. The point where I'd agreed to meet with River Shoulders was in the center of the Oliver Wildlife Preserve, which was a stand of woods that had been donated to the university for research purposes. As I hiked out into the little wood, it occurred to me that meeting River Shoulders there was like rendezvousing with Jaws in a kiddie wading pool. But he'd picked a spot, so whatever floated the big guy's boat. It was dark out, and I drew my silver pentacle amulet off my neck to use for light. A whisper of will and a muttered word, and the little symbol glowed with a dim blue light that would let me walk without bumping into a tree. It took me maybe 5 minutes to get to approximately the right area, and River Shoulders' soft murmur of greeting came to me out of the dark. We sat down together on a fallen tree, and I told him what I'd learned. He sat in silence for maybe 2 minutes after I finished. Then he said, "My son has joined himself to a parasite." I felt a flash of mild outrage. "You could think of it that way," I said. "What other way is there?" "That he's joined himself to a girl. The parasite just came along for the ride." River's shoulders exhaled a huge breath. It sounded like those pneumatic machines they used to elevate cars at the repair shop. "I see. In your view, the girl is not dangerous. She is innocent." "She's both," I said. "She can't help being born what she is, any more than you or I." River's shoulders grunted. "Have your people encountered the White Court before?" He grunted again. "Because the last time I helped Erwin out, I remember being struck by the power of his aura when he was only 14. A long-term draining spell that should have killed him only left him sleepy." I eyed him. "But I don't feel anything around you. Stands to reason your aura would be an order of magnitude greater than your kid's. That's why you've been careful never to touch me. You're keeping your power hidden from me, aren't you?"
"Maybe,"
I snorted. "Just the kind of answer I'd expect from a wizard."
"It is not something we care for outsiders to know," he said. "And we are not wizards. We see things differently than mortals. You people are dangerous."
"Huh," I said, and glanced up at his massive form beside mine. "Between the two of us, I'm the dangerous one."
"Like a child waving around his father's gun," River's shoulders said. Something in his voice became gentler. "Though some of you are better than others about it, I admit."
"My point is," I said, "the kid's got a life force like few I've seen. When Connie's hunger awakened, she fed on him without any kind of restraint, and he wound up with nothing worse than a hangover. Could be that he could handle a life with her just fine."
River's shoulders nodded slowly. His expression might have been thoughtful. It was too dark, and his features too blunt and chiseled, to be sure.
"The girl seems genuinely fond of him, and he of her. I mean, I'm not an expert in these things, but they seem to like each other. And even when they have a difference of opinions, they fight fair. That's a good sign." I squinted at him. "Do you really think he's in danger?"
"Yes," River's shoulder said. "They have to kill him now."
I blinked. "What?"
"This creature, this Beruil."
"Yeah?"
"It sent its child to this place with the intention that she meet a young man and feed upon him and unknowingly kill him."
"Yeah?" River's shoulder shook his huge head sadly.
"What kind of monster does that to its children?"
"Vampires," I said. "It isn't uncommon, from what I hear."
"Because they hurt," River's shoulders said. "Beruil remembers his own first lover. He remembers being with her. He remembers her death. And his Wendigo has had its hand on his heart ever since. It shaped his life."